Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, Darren Lewis, the assistant editor of the Daily Mirror, and TalkSport's Alex Crook, as the first trophy of the season gets decided.
It's on! It's 2-0! Wow. And it is surely Tottenham making the trip to Wembley!
But Andinho with a volley into the net, and that goal will seal Manchester City's place in the Carabao Cup final!
I'm pretty sure the players will be ready, like they have been. In this business that we have, the most honest and then the best is the play.
A full preview of that game and all the other matches this weekend, TalkSport's Alex Crook says he knows why Jose Mourinho got sacked at Spurs.
The last straw in the breakdown of the relationship between Daniel Levy and Jose Mourinho was that Jose Mourinho planned to field a weakened Tottenham team against Southampton in the league in midweek to focus fully on the League Cup final.
Also, Darren Lewis says the ESL protests will affect the outcome of some matches between now and the end of the season. Plus, fabulous Foden, silly stones, and why, well, relegation isn't entirely sorted. All on the ultimate preview of all the weekend's footballing action. From TalkSport, it's the Game Day podcast. And a big hello to Darren Lewis and Alex Crook. Well, it's been an interesting week, hasn't it? We are here to preview the action ahead of what is going to be a massive weekend. But I don't think we can ignore the seismic events of the last 4 days. I've got to admit, Crook, you have been absolutely all over this. Let's have a listen to what it sounded like on TalkSport.
It's absolutely massive news here on TalkSport. We understand all of the clubs are meeting right now with a view to disbanding the European Super League.
I just want to focus on this afternoon's trip up to Stamford Bridge. It has been absolutely amazing to see the Chelsea fans so happy after this news was announced today.
A little bit further down Fulham Road, as everybody kind of got moved on a little bit, word started to spread through the crowd that Chelsea had pulled out.
Liverpool Football Club can confirm that our involvement in proposed plans to form a European Super League has been discontinued.
I want to apologise to all the fans, supporters of Liverpool Football Club for the disruption I caused over the past 48 hours.
The biggest punishment to them owners is the stick they're taking at this moment from fans worldwide, never mind in this country.
All of those Chelsea fans outside the ground, how many of them do you think can get tickets for the game? How many can afford the £150 shirts? How many can afford their Sky subscriptions? So it's about still exploitation of the fans. This is what this is.
It's laughable that they've fallen over. Someone farted at them and they fell over. You're going to start a fight? At least have the fight. Are you big boys or not?
I'm delighted, and I think this is a victory for fans, and fans should savour it.
Yeah, the PFA this time have released a statement welcoming the news that the six English clubs have abandoned the European Super League.
And they just didn't get the groundswell of opinion from, as I say, the foot soldiers or the men in the streets.
The Super League is dead, but what happens next? The mobilisation of these big six clubs is not going to end here. They want to suck more money out of football. A British Super League, a regurgitation of Project Big Picture. What is going to happen next? Crook, you've been covering this right from the very beginning. You were the first ever Super League correspondent. Your job lasted about 36 hours. I know that you've been working all hours God sends during those 36, but what does happen next? Because, you know, we have to move it on and look ahead to what could happen in the future.
Well, first and foremost, I'd like to welcome our legacy fans and also any new listeners to the pod. We are all-inclusive here. We don't...
Have we got anybody under the age of 24?
Yeah, and have they got the attention span to listen to the whole pod? That's the big question. It was an incredible week. From when I got the call from TalkSport on Monday morning saying, can you get yourself down to London, cover this Super League story. It's been non-stop. It's a week that I'll probably never experience again. Certainly I've never experienced before in my journalism career. But I think although the Super League is dead, I think, as you say, there are still so many questions to be answered. We're still waiting to see what repercussions there will be for those six clubs from their own football authorities, for the Premier League. My understanding is that there are still a lot of very angry people amongst those 14 clubs who weren't part of the discussions, who do want some kind of sanctions. Whether that is feasible, whether they've actually broken any rules, I think is still open to debate. But what I do know is that I think it's galvanised those 14 clubs now, and they are determined to wrestle back some power from the big six and stop them getting their own way, as I think they have done for the past few years. And then from UEFA themselves, I think the threat of kicking the Super League sides out of their European competitions was very real. I'm now hearing this morning that actually they're going after individuals. Ed Woodward in particular could well face UEFA sanctions because they see him, despite what is being said elsewhere, as a real driving force behind this. And of course, he was a senior member of UEFA's own committee and therefore plotting against them behind their back, and actually having conversations with the UEFA president as recently as a week before the announcement, saying, oh, you've got nothing to worry about. So I think they feel really sore there. And then you've got the issue, as you said, at talk of a British Super League. And what's, I think, has almost gone under the radar is that on Monday, UEFA formally ratified their own plans for the rejig of the Champions League. And there's certain aspects of that that don't necessarily fall into line in terms of fairness and competitiveness. But they've almost gone unnoticed because all the focus has been on this Super League. So again, I think some clubs now, some UEFA members might try and get those plans thrown out. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how it develops. And as we're speaking here, I've just had to cut away to do a piece into Jim White's show on Talk Sport because Manchester United fans have actually gained entrance to their training ground at Carrington. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Michael Carrick and Nemanja Matic, among those senior members of staff at Manchester United, that had to persuade them to leave. There's protests planned for outside the Emirates on Friday. There'll be more protests at the Etihad and Old Trafford on Saturday. So if these owners think the heat is off them, and he's going to be off them anytime soon, I think they're sorely mistaken.
Do you need to lie down?
Quite possibly. Did that cover everything? Probably not.
I think you got most of it out. I hope it clips the big six's wings, really, to be honest with you, and they start to spread the power a little bit more equitably across the rest of the league, because one of the great strengths of the Premier League is the fact that there's so much equal distribution of prize money. That changed a couple of years ago in terms of the international rights. I hope this sort of underscores the fact that the egalitarian sort of model, and it is, look, I know that it's not the most perfect model in the entire world, but it's the most fair distribution of prize money in world football. I mean, it is the thing about the Premier League is that they keep most of the money in-house, and it goes between all 20 teams rather than just the big two, the big four, the big six, as it does do in other leagues. And I think that sort of fairness will certainly hold it in good stead going forward. It's why Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Real Madrid want a piece of the pie. You know, as Agnelli said, the reason they're doing this is because the richest game in the world is not the Champions League final, it's the championship playoff to get into the Premier League. They just want a bit of the Premier League, and they ain't having it.
It's on! It's 2-0! And it is surely Tottenham making the trip to Wembley.
Super Son sinks the Saints again, and surely that will give Tottenham Hotspur all 3 points.
We'll see how the season's ended up. If they've won a trophy, I think if they haven't, it'll be a failure, because to get into the top four now is a real big ask.
Fernandinho with a volley into the net, and that goal will seal Manchester City's place in the Carabao Cup final.
I'm pretty sure the players will be ready, like they have been. In this business that we have, the most honest and the best is the players.
And they lift the League Cup yet again. 3 in a row for Pep Guardiola's City. It is the Carabao Cup final, and it's live on Talk Sport.
The Carabao Cup final is on Sunday at 4:30. It's live on Talk Sport. Manchester City need 8 points from 5 matches to become the champions for the third time in 4 seasons, but their concentration is on a different piece of silverware this weekend. And City and Phil Foden, particularly, brilliant form, came back from a goal down against Aston Villa. If he replicates that form on Sunday, Spurs are in trouble, aren't they, Darren? But bearing in mind he played last night and the Champions League semi-final is coming up, will he even start the final?
Oh, I'd be amazed if he didn't start the final. 14 goals in this season, 7 of them, I think, in the Premier League. But it isn't just his composure in the box, his ability to find space. He starts moves, he finishes moves, he holds players off, holds the ball up well. He's just a wonderful player to watch. And Pep Guardiola's vindicated in his treatment of Phil Foden, because I remember lots of occasions, I probably was among those people who were saying he needs to go and play regular first-team football. He needs to be a player like Dele Alli playing week in, week out, or Harry Kane, who's built up a huge bank of playing time. But the treatment's been fantastic by Pep Guardiola, and now he's reaping the rewards.
Alex, he does make wholesale changes, though, doesn't he, Pep Guardiola? And he dismisses anyone for questioning that. If you ask him, why would you do that? But the team against Aston Villa was the A team. It was similar to the side that played in the second leg of the Champions League quarterfinal. I mean, does that potential rotation give Spurs a chance?
Possibly. And actually, if you look at Manchester City's recent performances, they have started to look a little bit more vulnerable defensively, not just because of the John Stones red card, but of course they conceded in the first few seconds last night. I mentioned in the pod at the weekend that they didn't cruise through the Dortmund game as much as you would have expected them to. So I don't think we're finding Manchester City in red hot form. So in that respect, it could be a good time for Tottenham to play them. And of course, I've mentioned John Stones. He will be missing from their lineup, having got himself sent off against Aston Villa. So that's one enforced change that they're going to have to make. I think the form of Raheem Sterling remains a concern as well. It cost Trevor Sinclair a bottle of wine after he had a bet with Simon Jordan about the impact that Raheem Sterling would make in the FA Cup semi-final, or lack of. Is this the occasion for Sterling to rediscover some rhythm and announce himself that he is still a star on the world stage? Because at this moment in time, if Gareth Southgate is picking an England 11 on form, I think you struggle to make a case for him being in it.
Well, at the moment, if you pick an England 11 on form, the forward players are struggling as much as the back players at the moment. And you mentioned John Stones, yet another night to forget against Aston Villa. Mistake for the goal after 20 seconds. And then a ridiculous challenge, which earned him a red card. I'm not quite sure what Pep Guardiola was complaining about. I mean, this is a guy who now needs to get his head back in the game, Darren, doesn't it? Because, you know, the idea of this just being a blip has sort of been torpedoed out of the water. The Dortmund error, we mentioned that. He was responsible for the first goal in the away leg. The England error against Poland, the sending off, and the concession of the goal here. You know, in the first 20 seconds, he loses concentration, dashes out. But that is some month.
Yeah, and it might well be that the enforced layoff helps him to get his head together as well. But I don't think it's his individual fault. If you look at Manchester City as their club, I was just looking at their stats while you were talking. They've not kept a clean sheet in their last 5 matches against Dortmund twice, Leeds, Chelsea and Aston Villa. That's not the Manchester City we've come to know and love. Now, last week when you asked me if City are going to win the league, I said, yes, I still do think they are going to win the league. But the door could be open if teams decide, look, they're there for the taking. Let's have a go. They're wonderful going forward, but a little bit wobbly at the back. And then who knows?
But they may not end up losing the league because their advantage is so great, but they may end up not fulfilling the kind of dreams that they were hoping to realise by winning the Carabao Cup. They've already out of the FA Cup. And the Champions League is not going to be an easy thing to negotiate if you can't defend against PSG.
Just before you come in, Crook, I mean, to be fair, it was us, really, wasn't it? We were the ones. I'll admit, you know, I'm in an industry, newspaper industry, where I was building up the quadruple. The broadcast industry is building up the quadruple. To be fair to City, they never, ever talked about the possibility.
Zinchenko did and Gundogan did, but apart from that, they didn't really talk about it.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, to be fair to Crook, he always said they wouldn't win all 4 trophies, Darren.
Hold on. Is there an I told you so button? We need to get an I told you so button.
Listen, I think as far... that I told you so thing, you know, Crook, to be fair, you have said a lot of things that have come true. I know Sam gives you a hard time, but
this is the time for lovemaking.
Tell me that wasn't you.
Okay.
on the subject of team selection, by the way, I know we're going to come on
the subject of lovemaking. That's going to be stop. Make it stop.
This is the time for lovemaking.
Just flicking it around to the Tottenham perspective. I've got some information this morning, and I'm keen to see if Darren from his sources is hearing the same thing. But apparently, the last straw in the breakdown of the relationship between Daniel Levy and Jose Mourinho was that Jose Mourinho planned to field a weakened Tottenham team against Southampton in the league in midweek to focus fully on the League Cup final. Daniel Levy barred him from doing so because he still felt, and obviously still feels after win against Southampton, there is a slim chance that Tottenham can gatecrash the top four. Apparently there was a heated exchange in which Jose Mourinho is alleged to have told Daniel Levy, this is why Tottenham don't win trophies, because you put your priorities in the wrong basket. Darren, are you hearing similar stories?
Well, not to that extent. I mean, I had heard a story about the weakened side in the league because of the lack of consistency in the Tottenham team. But the detail that you've got there says a lot about the tensions that did exist between the two teams. And I can certainly tell you that when I was at the game, we were recording this on Thursday, I was at the game the night before against Southampton. And I must tell you, it really did catch my eye, the desire in the Tottenham team in the second half.
Yeah,
but you say that. But, you know, they started the game with a lot with. The confidence appeared to be drained from the players. I was quite alarmed by how slovenly they were. And I looked at the stats at halftime, and Southampton had more attempts on goal, more shots on target, and Spurs just looked all over the place.
Well, Tottenham hadn't had a shot on target. I was at that game as well. Funnily enough, I didn't see you. You must have been busy again.
No, I always avoid you when you come to Premier League games.
Yes,
you do. With your entourage. But at halftime, Bale talked at full time actually about Ryan Mason's team talk, and he said that he really was inspirational. In the second half, there was a lot more desire. There was a lot, you know, Winks came on, exiled under Jose Mourinho. I've no doubt we'll see Dele Alli in the side sooner rather than later. And it looks very much as though the players, however inexperienced Ryan Mason might be, they're trying to do their best for him because they see him as giving them all a chance.
Well, he's in charge of Spurs this weekend. He didn't sound particularly confident when I spoke to him afterwards that his best mate Harry Kane was going to be fit for that game. They were very cagey about it, though, and I wonder whether or not he's going to try and force himself to play on Sunday. Spurs haven't won anything for 13 years. He is their leader. He will feel as if it is his duty to get out there and try and win that match for them because he's a massive threat. But if he does so, is he risking a place in the European Championship team?
Well, he's not just risking that. He's risking Tottenham's hopes of glory because we saw what a half-fit Harry Kane did to them in the Champions League final against Liverpool. He rushed himself back for that game and he was a passenger. They were basically playing with 10 men. So I think this might be one of those instances where Harry Kane actually has to put the team before himself because we saw him hobble off. We know he's had problems with the ankle before. There's no way that he can be fully fit in such a short period of time. No chance.
I'd add to that. You talk about, is he risking Tottenham's hopes of glory? He's risking his own health, his own well-being. Put England aside, put Tottenham aside. Harry Kane has to think about himself.
But he's done this before, Darren.
He has, but, you know, is that a good thing? You know, I read in Roy Keane's book where he talked about foreign players, Ruud van Nistelrooy, basically putting his health first. And Roy Keane saying, you know, now I look back, I thought maybe at the time he was a little bit of a coward. I don't think he used that word, so forgive me, Roy, for listening. But he said, but now I look back and I see that was the right thing to do, to look after my long-term well-being. And I think Kane has to do that. He keeps rushing back and we know all about his desire. He has nothing whatsoever to prove. And clearly he would want to come back for an opportunity to win silverware, but he's got to put himself first so that we can enjoy him for a lot longer.
Yeah, and defence has been Tottenham's biggest issue, isn't it? Darren touched on it last week in the podcast and the lack of investment in the back four. I think frustrated Mourinho, and I think has been their Achilles heel, and I think that's why it's difficult to make any watertight case for Tottenham pulling off an upset, because Manchester City have got so many good forward players. They've got so many good players all over the pitch. Tottenham won't keep a clean sheet, and I don't think Tottenham, especially if Kane isn't fit, will have the firepower to outscore them. That.
No goal, no clean sheet in their last seven games for Spurs. They just can't seem to go any given game without making a mistake. And that presumably is the reason why Mourinho played, what was it, five at the back and two defensive midfielders against Everton, because they just can't seem to get it right. And if they get to the summer and they do something, if somehow they get in the top four, they've got to go out and invest in at least one commanding centre-half, possibly two.
Look, they can get into the top four. They've got 53 points. Leicester in third, 56. They've played a game, two games less. Chelsea have played a game less, but 55 points. West Ham, 55 points. Liverpool just below them, 53. Look, it's a right bun fight to the end of the season. And
that would vindicate Daniel Levy and Alex's story that he was...
Absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I don't think you can play a weakened team on Wednesday night and then expect to go into a Carabao Cup final after getting, you know, your bum slapped by Southampton. And let's be completely clear. In that first 45 minutes... if it had been a different day, they would have been 3-0 down. Hugo Lloris made two terrific saves in the first 3 minutes and then had to make another one from Salisu later on in the half. I mean, they were fortunate to go in at the break only 1-0 down.
Saw a great stat on Twitter about Hugo Lloris, basically saying that Ryan Mason obviously picking Hugo Lloris and the age difference between the two. If Roy Hodgson was to do the same thing, then he would be picking Dino Zoff in goal for Crystal Palace this weekend.
It's a damaging result for West Ham. Whether West Ham finish in the top four is now open to question. Newcastle United 3, West Ham United 2.
If you give me any European football for West Ham, it would have to be seen as a massive step up from where we've been.
Lingard continues, and that's a brilliant goal from Jesse Lingard, and West Ham double their lead.
Chelsea 0, Brighton 0, a point for Chelsea that puts them back into the top four.
This club here is a club who loves competition and it's a very competitive club.
A delicate left-footed curler from Kai Havertz, and Chelsea have the lead.
So in all direction, everything is possible, but it's in our hands now.
What a game in prospect it is. The biggest concern, I suppose, for West Ham is the decimation of their spine. So far this season, they've been pretty steadfast and have risen to the challenge, forcing their way into the top four. But this weekend, Darren, Dawson is suspended. Cresswell is doubtful. Rice is out. Antonio is out. There were some concerns over Jesse Lingard, but that apparently was just cramp. And they, West Ham, have just lost to Newcastle because of some terrible defending. What happens here? You've just got off the phone to Mark Noble, I know. What was he telling us?
What he's telling me, certainly, is that I think there'll be no dip in spirit. Whoever's missing... whoever doesn't play, whoever is suspended, we know Dawson's suspended, that West Ham side will go out and compete. They've done that all season. It's an incredible season as far as they're concerned. You know what you get when West Ham play hard work, hard graft. And even if Chelsea have got too much class, they will have to summon up all of it. And I think, you know, when you look at Chelsea struggling to beat Brighton at home the other day, you realise that it's not as straightforward as some people might think.
And this fixture is not well placed for Chelsea, Alex, just days before they play Real Madrid in the semi-finals of the Champions League.
Yeah, and they were a bit flat against Brighton in midweek as well, weren't they? I do wonder if David Moyes might use this Super League story to create a bit of a siege mentality at West Ham. And his team talk could almost be, come on, lads, look, these were the measures that the big clubs were going to go to stop us qualifying for the Champions League. Yeah. Don't let them take it out of your grasp.
Do you know, I saw you
talk come on, West Ham.
You talked about something you saw the other day. The best thing that was sent to me by a pal of mine was that the Super League reminds you of all of us agreeing to go on a night out before our other halves tell us that we can't go.
It's absolutely true. It's like when we try and decide, oh, do you know what we should do in the summer? We should go on a golf trip, yeah? And then one by one, we'll come back and say, no, I'm actually not allowed to do that.
I never said I wasn't allowed.
I know you didn't, which is why
you are the Florentino Perez of this group.
And it's why no one of the 24 is interested in you. Right. I expect Chelsea to control and West Ham to try and spring on the counter-attack. The fact that they haven't had a midweek game, Darren, might actually help. And they love beating Chelsea, don't they?
Yeah, they've got a good record. They always seem to turn up historically, don't they, against the big sides whenever they've... they don't always, obviously, the class of the bigger sides does more often than not tend to tell, but West Ham always give a good account of themselves. And we've seen so many times this season when the expectations have been low, West Ham have pulled it out of the bag. So I don't think at any level that you can say that this one's a foregone conclusion. And Jesse Lingard, he'll be available, my understanding is. And when he is up front, and the way that we expect Chelsea to play as well, it could well be that under counter-attack, when West Ham have been best this season, they might get some joy.
Yeah, exactly what I think will happen in terms of that Chelsea will try to look to dominate the match and then try and ball their way through the game without conceding any chances. They'll make one mistake and then West Ham will have an opportunity. It's the key thing is West Ham taking those opportunities when they come about, because they probably will be few and far between, because Chelsea matches overall don't have many goals. They don't feature many goals for either side.
No, that's right. And obviously West Ham's strongest part of their team at the moment is attack, because they have started to concede goals. Is it 11 goals conceded in their last four matches? I'm sure, yeah. David Moyes would have been working overtime on the training ground to try and eradicate that and try and make them more resolute.
Fabianski decided to catch this week, so I think he'll probably be a little bit better at keeping the ball out of the net.
You're ageist. He's not getting any younger, Fabianski. Leave him alone.
Oh, don't be rude. That's not fair. This isn't the prime of his life for a goalkeeper. What are you talking about?
I think he's 36 now, isn't he?
He's not 36, is he? Is he really?
He is.
Hold on a second, caller. Can't be 36. I know he's old because I did him the other week.
Isn't he younger than you?
He's 36. Yeah, he is younger than me. He's 7 years younger than me, but I'm not a goalkeeper. I'm playing professional footballer. But listen, I think 36 is okay for a goalkeeper, especially nowadays, because they don't really do too much, do they? And their nutrition and exercise regime is superb. Are you suggesting that his hand-eye coordination is going because he's 36, Crook?
No, I'm just pointing out that you're having a go at a pensioner, effectively.
That escalated quickly.
Wow. Actually, what is the age that you can take your football pension? I think it is 35, isn't it?
He will certainly, in Darren's match report now, be labelled veteran, Fabianski, now that Darren knows that he's 36.
West Ham have scored at least two goals in 10 of their last 14 league matches. How will they perform live on TalkSport when they take on Chelsea this Saturday evening?
Very quickly.
That is the biggest interruption I've ever had.
No, I just an irony for you.
Go on.
I just need to squeeze in. How much have Chelsea spent on their forward players since last summer? Ziyech was about what?
33, rising to 40 million. 80 on the boy Havertz, and I think
Werner.
Werner is about 40 as well. It's been rising to 50 depending on his goal scoring exploits. So 40.
Right. So that's what,
150 million.
West Ham have scored more goals than Chelsea in the Premier League this season.
Interrupting us for that, wasn't it? Because you stumbled over it three times.
It's like in a wedding, isn't it? When the vicar says, if anyone knows of any lawful reason why this couple should not be married, please speak now. Darren Lewis bursts in.
Please raise it now.
I think that's a remarkable stat.
It is.
When you consider that West Ham have got no orthodox striker this season.
It is. You just could have waited until I finished my sentence.
Sorry.
I'm only joking. It's the end of the season. We're obviously Dean Mob happy. Right, let's get to Arsenal, Everton and Liverpool, Newcastle.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Arsenal against Everton Friday night, 8 o'clock. After rescuing a 1-1 draw against Fulham on Sunday, how much will Arsenal be concentrating on this? Bearing in mind, Crook, that they've got a European semi-final on the agenda.
And a fair amount of noise around the stadium as well in their fan base. Their preparation has been far from ideal. Clearly, the Europa League is their priority. But I think he'll still name a strong side, Mikel Arteta. He won't want the embarrassment of Arsenal finishing in the bottom half of the table. That point that Leeds picked up against Liverpool has increased the chances of that happening. I've given up trying to predict Everton. I haven't been very impressed with them of late, but they do have some match winners. I could see a score draw, I think, in this game. I can see goals.
The one thing is that Everton are very good away from home, haven't they? They've been better on the road than they have been at Goodison Park this season. They were better, actually, against Tottenham last Friday night. James in a slightly different position. 9 of their 15 away league games this season have resulted in victory. And Arsenal, Darren, have got no Alba, no Luiz, no Tierney, no Odegaard, no Lacazette. I think all those things will count against them.
Yeah, but they do have the young players whose desire has been far more than the senior players so far this season.
Would you risk them?
Yeah, I would, because big clubs play good players in, you know, whatever match.
But what about Arsenal?
Yeah, but they are all naughty. Listen, I think you've got to play. If you're in the first team squad, you have to be prepared to play in any game. And I don't think Arsenal are good enough to be expecting to compete for the top four, but resting players for the Europa League matches. They've got to play. And the only thing is, I don't think Everton have got a great chance. No win in their last 5 Premier League games for Everton. They're neither good at home or away. They just can't defend. I've said before in the pod that Ancelotti needs to go out and get competition for the keeper, serious competition. I don't think Olsen's the guy. I think he needs another, at least one more centre-half, maybe two. And he needs more goals up front. He's got to do some serious shopping in the summer. But Arsenal, listen, I think this will be a score draw because I don't think either side is good enough and I don't think Arsenal will win the Europa League.
Just on Everton's away form, you said 9 wins from 15. I think if they do make it 10 this weekend, that will be the first time since the Premier League came into being in 1992. So a chance for Carlo Ancelotti to set a little piece of history.
I'd like to apologise because I do sound a little bit anti-Big Six this week. In fact, I don't want to apologise. That's how I feel.
Good.
I feel a little bit anti-Big Six this week. And if they all lose, I won't be too upset about it.
I don't think we should call them the Big Six anymore.
No, the Six. There you are.
The Scum Six.
Oh, no, I think that's a little bit harsh. I noticed that you did try to coin that earlier in the week and it very quickly disappeared. that might be a stretch. @Alex_Crook on Twitter.
Jota with an outstanding header for Liverpool.
Yes, we are under pressure like everybody can imagine in a sense of we want to finish in the top four.
The point will leave Liverpool in 6. It ends at Elland Road. Leeds 1, Liverpool 1.
We go into every game looking to win. We need to play our own game.
Joe Willock stepping off the bench, scoring another crucial goal for Newcastle.
All of a sudden we've lost one of the last 7 games. So just at the right time, we've showed a bit of consistency, which is important.
3 big points for Newcastle in their quest to stay in the Premier League.
You know, there's lots of things being levelled at us all this year, but they've got a good spirit that's a vital part of it to go and get the results that we need.
Liverpool against Newcastle is Saturday 12:30. That's live on TalkSport. Newcastle should be safe. Will they down tools now that they think that they've probably got the job done, or will they play with a freedom at a place where they haven't won any of their last 24 visits in the Premier League? Callum Wilson is fit.
Yeah, that's a bonus. I don't think we really associate this Newcastle team under Steve Bruce with playing with freedom. And this fixture, I'm sure it will get a big mention on game day, evokes memories, and those back-to-back seasons when it finished 4-3 at Anfield and Kevin Keegan slumped in his seat. But we're in different times now. I think you're right. Mathematically, Newcastle may still need some more points on the board, but it's very hard to make a case for Fulham or West Bromwich Albion catching up with them. So this is a must-win for Liverpool. They dropped two more points against Leeds on Monday night. At that stage, we weren't sure if they were bothered about qualifying for the Champions League or not, but I think you can tell by Jurgen Klopp's spiky post-match reaction that he was hurt by those two drop points. I would expect them to get back to winning ways this weekend.
Top four is still Liverpool's target, Darren. It's all they have to play for now. They were rattled by Leeds on Monday at a time where the ESL protests were at their height. So I think that had an impact as well. But if you want to finish in the top four, you've got to be beating teams like Leeds United. Well, hold on a second. Chelsea didn't do that, nor did Manchester City, so maybe not.
Yeah, I think nobody really has any consistent winning form in that race for the top four at the moment, which is what makes this league so wonderful. And ironically, you know, the fact that it is so unpredictable is the beauty and the reason why so many people want to continue with the existing structure as it is. I think that Super League controversy will be an important factor really going forward now in the climax of this season, because fans protesting outside stadiums, players preoccupied with the uncertainty around it, everyone's getting a bit rattled. And
everybody feels a bit flat. I think it changes your outlook. I mean, I went to a pub on Tuesday night to watch my team play a game. I didn't watch that game. No. I wasn't interested in that game. No. I was following the other developments that were going on elsewhere. And I didn't care about the result. Now, that should not be the case at any juncture. That's never really the case at any time. But that's how it felt. And I'm not going to lie about that. I didn't care.
Well, I was at the game. And my top line was that the match was an irrelevance, because it really was. Nobody cared about the result. Clearly, the result does matter. But on that night, nobody cared. People care about the bigger picture. And this is my point. A lot of emotional energy has been expended this week by people angry at what they've seen, angry at what's been going on behind the scenes, angry at what could yet happen. Because when these guys, now that these guys have established they want to make money, they're not going to just stop wanting to make money. They'll come up with something else in a different way. There's a lot of anger directed at these guys as well in relation to the apologies. I mean, look, I work in the newspaper industry, so I remarked on John W. Henry's, the length of the apology, the way that he put it across, it was very different to the club statements that come out, that have been put out by the other clubs.
But what club does he work for? Does he work for Liverpool or LFC? I couldn't really work it out which one it was. That term that we all use when we're talking about that team, the player at Anfield.
And as I say, you know, PR spin means that the people who write the PR don't always understand the way that they should be putting it across. They just put words together. And it is PR spin as far as they are concerned, an attempt to get fans back on side, but fans are not having it, and rightly so. And
they're not stupid. Supporters aren't stupid. They can see through the nonsense. And all of those apologies were hollow.
Oh, goodness me. They were apologising because they got caught, not because they genuinely meant what they were saying. And I think my point is, we're analysing the action on the pitch, but I think what is going to happen is that the events off the pitch are going to be a factor in the performances of the players going forward.
I agree.
Everything is going to be straightforward.
And I think that'll be both in terms of the clubs who play for the former Big Six, how they will react to what's happening outside the stadium, and the fact that they were kept in the dark by their employers. That hasn't gone down well amongst the various squads. But also the opponents they come up against, I think, are going to want to raise their game. I think it will be even more so if there were spectators inside stadiums. You can imagine the atmosphere that would greet these teams as they come out onto the pitch.
And this is against everything that I would have relieved in a week ago, but I cannot tell you how much I would love this season to end with Leicester and West Ham United in the Champions League.
Yeah. I think it'd be a wonderful statement for football if that were to happen.
Yep. Sorry, but I that's what I believe. Right, let's go to Stats Entertainment.
We should get the Stats Entertainment. Come on.
And you should sing.
You've done it. That's it. That is the new jingle. That little bit from Crook. That's it. Brilliant. Fantastic. Lucy, how are you?
I'm good, Talia.
Oh, nice to see you. It's great to have you back. I mean, we had Scott here last week, and he was very good. He was very good. But
He was like a headmaster trying to keep control of an unruly class.
What does that make me?
Well, you walked into that one, didn't you? Right, Luce, what you got for us?
Okay, so it's now time for a quick look at one of our weekend fixtures through the medium of stats. So you will need to give me your best stat from the game between Leeds v Man United. Then I will judge who has the best. Now, just a quick recap on how the leaderboard currently stands, okay? So Darren, you're first place with 5 points.
Ooh.
Sam, you're second with 4. And Crook, you are last with 3.
Harsh.
Right, go on, Crook. Take it away.
Well, Manchester United have a new super sub in the form of Edinson Cavani. Only Javier Hernandez and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer himself have scored more Premier League goals off the bench in a single season for Manchester United than Cavani has done this campaign.
There wasn't much wit there, was there?
No.
You gave me half an hour's notice after I've pretty much worked solidly for 48 hours to come up with a stat.
Oh, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Let's feel sorry for Alex Crook because he's got a job. Where were you last night?
I was working. I was in.
Where were you last night?
In and around London Bridge.
You were in and around London Bridge, but I don't think you were working because you were texting me at 5:30 from Vinegar Yard, just down from London Bridge, and you were still there until midnight. So you had 7 hours drinking, I think, with a whole group from Talksport. I don't think that constitutes working. It might work with Mrs. Crook, but it doesn't work with us. Right, let's move on.
Right, Sam, go.
Right, Manchester United, they are the team you'd buy a half-season ticket for, aren't they? It would be the second half, but it would still be a half-season ticket because in the first half of football matches in the Premier League, they are dreadful. They sit 12th in the first half table over the course of the season. The fact that they are second in the table itself overall shows how good they are in the second period of football matches, as displayed in their Sunday game against Burnley. In fact, did you know that Manchester United have not led at the interval in 25 of their 32 matches? So if you do get back into a Manchester United game next season, why don't you spend the first half of it in the pub with Crook, and then you can come and join at half time and still have a great experience.
Can I just give up now? Because I think that was a lot better than I'm going to give you. And it made me laugh. You sounded very much like a teacher shooting to pieces a child's excuse for not bringing his homework.
Well, does it mean I'm going to go top of the table no matter what you do?
I think it might well do, but I don't mind. I'll clear up the colours anyway.
Go on, Darren, give it a go.
Thank you. Thank you for having such a sympathetic tone as you introduced me as well.
Nurse Lucy.
I don't rate Liverpool's chances for this game. They've got fewer chances of beating. I don't know, actually. I think defensively they're poor, but Leeds, having said that, have only won one of their last 12 home games against Liverpool in all competitions. And there's a neat symmetry about Leeds' form going into this game because they've both scored and conceded 50 goals in the Premier League this season in their 32 games so far. Only Tottenham in the 2008-7-8 season had done so in fewer matches in the campaign. They'd done it in 30 matches. But as far as Leeds are concerned, it's going to be a thriller-minute contest because they've got as much chance of scoring goals as they do of conceding goals. And there you go. The colours cleared up.
There you go. Well done.
You took all the wind out of my sails, Samuel, with your evisceration of Alexander. And look, he's sitting there all contrite.
Yeah, he hasn't spoken since.
I was talking to Jim White, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jim, Simon, can I come on again, please? I haven't been on for 10 minutes. I've got some more breaking news that I've seen on Twitter.
Right. let's score you up. So, Crook, I'm not happy with the excuses you're given. And I think next week, less time in the pub, more time researching. 1 point.
You sound exactly like my school teacher.
Darren, it was a strong effort, but I think you've just been pipped to the post today. So, Darren, you have 2, and Sam, you have 3.
Get in! That's my first win of the campaign.
What's the leaderboard looking like, then?
So, that means that Sam and Darren, you are tied at the top.
Ooh. I'll take that. I'll
top of the top. And Crook stranded last, is that what we were saying?
Yeah.
Aston Villa against West Bromwich Albion is Sunday at 7 o'clock. Is the great escape still on for West Brom? They have one or two games in hand. They've got a local derby to play this weekend. Then another local derby against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Imagine if they won both those games. Because then after that, Alex and Darren, they've got a free hit. They play Arsenal. Then two home games with Liverpool and West Ham before they finish at Leeds. It would be the greatest of great escapes. But is it possible?
I think they've given themselves too much to do, but it's a nice couple of fixtures you've mentioned there. If you were to hand pick two teams to play right now, probably apart from Southampton, who we'll come on to, I'm sure, Aston Villa and Wolves would be right up there, wouldn't they? Aston Villa's form has completely nosedived in the absence of Jack Grealish. They played okay against Manchester City, but lost again, and their season really is petering out, which is a shame given how well they started. And Wolves as well, question marks in the papers this morning about Nuno Espirito Santo and his future. Wolves may be planning a successor, should he be tempted by Daniel Levy to go and replace Jose Mourinho at Tottenham. He's very high in the betting for that job. So, yeah, I think West Bromwich Albion can get points from these next two games. I think it will still be too little too late.
West Brom have lost 2 of their last 7 against Aston Villa. You mentioned Southampton. They haven't got a fixture this weekend because their game against Tottenham obviously had to be moved to midweek because of the Carabao Cup final, but they were very good in the first 45 minutes. Absolutely the kind of performance that they should have put in on Sunday against Leicester and didn't, and ended up still losing this game anyway. And I spoke to Ralph Hasenhüttl afterwards and I said, you've lost more points from winning positions than any other manager since you took charge of Southampton. 55 points from winning positions. I said, does it keep you up at night? Have you got a reason? He said, if I had a reason for that happening, I would have solved it by now. But it is a real worry, and we've got to stop doing it because they've got 36 points from 32 games, but their fixtures are horrible. They are horrible.
And they're bottom of the form table for the calendar year. No team in the Premier League now has taken fewer points. So, yeah, it's a concern. And it can't be a coincidence if you keep getting yourself into winning positions and keep throwing away points. And I think certainly last night, a lot of Southampton fans on social media in the aftermath of the game questioning Ralph Hasenhüttl's in-game decision-making, his in-game management, because he broke up that midfield axis of Ward-Prowse and Armstrong to bring on Diallo. And that seemed to be where they lost control of the game.
That was a forced change because Ings was injured, wasn't it? So he needed to bring somebody on. But instead of replacing Ings with somebody else or bringing on a winger and pushing Walcott further up, he decided what he'd do is he'd take someone into midfield and change the configuration of the team.
Yeah, and it's a concern. And obviously, I've been Ralph's biggest supporter and he has had the faith of the Southampton fans up to this point. But there is a groundswell now that are just beginning to ask questions because they're limping towards safety. And that didn't look the case when they beat Liverpool on January the 4th.
I made the point on Drive yesterday. Adrian Durham and I were talking about it. And I said, I don't think the squad's good enough. He said, actually, he thought that there were good enough players there and that Ralph should be getting a better tune out of them. What do you think, Darren?
I don't think the squad's good enough. I think there are lots of players who are average in that team. I think that the focus has gone. Defensively, they're poor. They've lost their last 3 games. It's interesting you talk about Ralph's reaction to your question because I was in a post-match press conference last night. This is recorded Thursday. The game was on Wednesday night. And he looked at a loss. He looked really nonplussed when the question was put to him. And he said to the person who asked him, what do you want me to say? Tactics? There were lots of things he just threw into the answer. He even blamed the substitutes because we know Gineppo gave away that penalty in the final few minutes of the game against Spurs.
Ludicrous challenge.
But he just seemed at a loss.
And that rang alarm bells to me because this losing run is going to continue. I think morale is low, confidence is lower, and I think that they are in a position at the moment where...
That they collapse quicker than the Super League, this lot. I mean, as soon as you score against them, that's it. It's all over.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fascinating thing about it is, as I said earlier in the pod, they were really good in the first half.
Yeah,
and yet, what was put to them was that maybe they're inspired by Ings, and once Ings is not playing, they can't find their way again, because I don't think they'd have been this bad had Ings stayed on the pitch. But without him, they're nothing.
Well, without him, they have not a threat, which is a problem.
Yeah. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but, you know, they are very, very poor without him.
They don't score enough goals, do they? I mean, over the course of the season, if you look at the number of goals they've scored away from home, what is it? I don't know, something like 19 or something like that. I mean,
and Sam, that's probably why Ings is not signing a new deal. He's probably thinking, I can't keep bailing the team out. I've got to be playing in a team where my goals mean something rather than me having to bail the team out all the time.
I do think that there is context here. You know, Ralph Hasenhüttl too. He's clearly not an untalented man, and he's not an unintelligent man. He knows what he's doing. There has been a very small amount of investment in Southampton, but he also has made some odd decisions. And I don't think his demeanour helps, because every time they have a collapse, he looks like a beaten man. Is he a little bit too emotional? I'm not being disrespectful. I know people think that he's out of order if you criticise the fact that he cried when they beat Liverpool. But is he a little bit too emotional? And does that have an effect on the players?
Maybe, but I think all managers take defeat personally. And, you know, look at Scott Parker and some of his reaction. I think it's impossible not to be emotional. Maybe particularly at the moment when you haven't got fans inside the stadium. So you're almost having to generate your own atmosphere, if you like, from the touchline.
Right, Wolves against Burnley Sunday, live on TalkSport 2. Burnley, they're certainly not safe, are they? 33 points from 32 games and spiralling, because they've lost the plot in the last few weeks. They've lost to Newcastle and Southampton. Crikey, they are in trouble. They take on Wolverhampton Wanderers, and they've won just one of their last six trips to Molineux. Could they get relegated? Is there any hope for West Brom and Fulham here, Darren?
No, I think... I think... The bottom three will now go down. Fulham have had a lot of opportunities. I did believe for a long time that they could reel in one of the teams above them, but they've not taken their chances, and you can't hope to stay up if you can't take your chances. I think the bottom three will go down. That said, Burnley, I think going forward, got some questions to answer, because they can't hope to keep hold of Sean Dyche if they don't invest in the squad. He's done what he can to keep them in a position where they can remain competitive, but they've lost their last three, one win in their last nine matches, and they can't keep circling the drain. You know what I say about that, so I won't do that one again.
Crook, during the whole of that answer from you, Darren, was cupping his ear, going right up to the camera. If we were all in the same studio, he would have been in your face there asking you, what was that? What was that? Because you've trotted out a line that he has been peddling for the last 6 months.
Yeah. Darren?
You're so ruthless, Alexander.
He is.
You are so ruthless. I enjoy the romance of football.
Me too.
I would have loved to see Scott Parker.
It's not over yet.
Well, it's not over yet. And maybe...
West Brom have got seven games left.
Absolutely. It could well be me cupping my ear to you, Alex, by the end.
It won't just be you. We will be in his face. We'll be right there getting our big ears like this in his face. If anything changes, I'll be delighted just to wind him up. I don't care who goes down, as long as it's not one of the bottom three currently, of which Sheffield United are already down. They are relegated. They take on Brighton live on Talk Sport. Brighton, again, another team that aren't entirely safe, because they've only got 34 points, although they're a very, very good team. It actually is amazing that they've only got 34 points, and it is something that they're going to have to address in the summer, that they get some sort of striker who can put the ball in the back of the net. The life has been sucked out of the Blades. This would be a great opportunity, I think, Alex, for Brighton to show how good they are.
Do you want a bold prediction?
Well, you're so reticent to do this normally. We probably should ask you to do it, yeah.
I was having a conversation with Adrian Durham and a couple of other TalkSport staff members during my trip to London in the week. And I made the bold shout that if...
And you were working.
if Brighton signed Tammy Abraham, and he is on their list, I think West Ham is probably his more likely destination. If Brighton did manage to sign Tammy Abraham, they can finish in the top six next season because they are not far away from that.
You're still hungover, aren't you?
The rest of the team is in place. If they had someone
still drinking,
if they had someone who could convert the numerous chances they create, they would be a really good team. In fact, I also said
if they sign Haaland, they'll win the league.
No, I also said to an Arsenal fan producer,
are they competing for Harry Kane?
That I think a lot of that Brighton team would get in the Arsenal team and they would improve it.
There you go.
Both the centre halves for a start and Yves Bissouma.
This is the time for lovemaking.
Right, okay, that's it from us. We're back on Sunday after the Carabao Cup final when we look back on Ryan Mason's greatest achievement, just two games in, or City's march to a treble of sorts. Alex Crook will be with me on Sunday night. Plus, you can rate and review our podcast and tell your friends about it and subscribe to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport. We're all off to do some work down Vinegar Yard.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on TalkSport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.